PTF here. What's the old joke? If you want to make God laugh, make a plan. Well, that's sort of the story of my Thursday, where I had planned to get all my work done by noon so I could go out and enjoy some time with my friends who are in town who are having their 10th anniversary. Well, Rich Strike and his connections had other plans, folks. So I'm back here in the bunker, just adding a little bit of context before this video to say that Naomi and I recorded this video about the likely Preakness contenders before we got that surprising news of his defection. We'll see how that one works out. I don't think it really changes too much in the video because it's not like he was going to be a pace player, closer anyway. We weren't very sanguine about his chances. I don't think we'll be in the Belmont in a few weeks' time either. So you can sort of reserve those comments on Rich Strike, and we'll rerun them in a few weeks, and you can listen to the comments on the other 10 runners that we got to in this video. Just wanted to add this on to, like I said, add some context, but hope you enjoy the video anyway. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast, a little nano podcast. Peter Thomas Fornital here back with you from the Brooklyn Bunker once again, joined by our Maryland correspondent. She has many things, but one of them is our Maryland correspondent ahead of all the excitement around this year's Preakness Stakes. She's doing her best Matt Bernier impression with the hat on, but you know her, you love her. She's Naomi Tucker. What's going on, Naomi?
Oh, Goopy, I did ask permission. I was like, can I pull a Matt Bernier and can I put a hat on? Because I haven't been able to fix my hair yet. So I'm going to save everyone that view and just be repping the Pegasus World Cup, which is one of my favorite days. So I thought it was a win-win.
You do look resplendent in your Pegasus hat. Of course, one of the biggest days in the first racing Stronic world is the Preakness. It's coming up next Saturday. And I'd say this year, we have more attention than usual going into the Preakness because of what a huge national, international story Rich Strike's win in the Kentucky Derby was. I'll just ask you the key question straight away. Do you think this horse has any chance to back it up and repeat in the Preakness?
I really, really want him to, but I guess from that sharp handicapping point of view, things have to go his way like they did in the Kentucky Derby. We've been talking about how hefty the pace was, how perhaps it wasn't as expected. It took two international horses to set it up. None of those are going to be lining up in the Preakness. So my gut says no, even though I really would like him to, because what a tremendous story. 80-1, first starter for trainer Eric Reed in the Kentucky Derby, first ride for jockey Sonny Leon in the Kentucky Derby. And then we've all seen the aerial shot, the way he was moving through traffic like it was nobody's business at the end. It was amazing. And he did reel in two incredibly strong horses, one of them, of course, being Epicenter, who we hope to see line up in here again as well. And perhaps the third place getter, Zandon, will attend too. And those are two solid, solid runners who both also came off the pace. So it's not like they were burning it up in front. They stayed away from this as well. So all in all, Rich Strike, it was a legitimately strong performance based on what he was given in the race. Now, I am not sure those same conditions will apply when he gets to Baltimore.
It does remind me of three other Preaknesses from fairly recent vintage. We're going back a ways now. But I do recall with big long shot winners in my era of going to the Derby, horses like Charismatic and Giacomo, they come back and then even Mind That Bird. They come back and they don't necessarily get super respected by the crowd. Obviously, we're not going to see 80-1 again, but 6-1, 8-1. I think even with all the attendant publicity, it's not like this horse is going to go off as a favorite. So if you're of that belief that this race represented a new level of ability, I would imagine you're not going to have a trouble wading into the pool at that price. For me, though, I'm with you in what I think you were indicating, that it took a unique set of circumstances for him to produce that big effort. And I'm going to bet the don't pass line here, even if it makes me seem like kind of a cynical jerk of a horse player. For me, I'm far more interested in Epicenter This horse to me, clearly from a form study handicapping point of view, whatever you want to call it, is the horse that ran the best race. Yeah, he came from off the pace, but he attacked it way earlier, and I feel like he made his move into the fastest part of that race. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on Epicenter, if he can maybe pull in a Fleet Alex and go from the early move in the Derby to showing us what he's really all about in the Preakness. Hopefully he won't have to get knocked off stride to do so.
Look, to me, Epicenter was my choice in the Kentucky Derby. So clearly I have a love affair with the horse already, but he's the real deal. He proved it again with that gutsy effort. Like you said, attacked it from way, way earlier than Rich Strike did. I did like that with Epicenter, like I highlighted before in the Louisiana Derby, they taught him how to rate. They taught him how to take dirt. You saw it came in handy in the Kentucky Derby when all of a sudden they were just going lickety-split up front. Epicenter is so flexible. He could take the lead. He can sit handy. He can sit mid-pack. I think he was eighth at the first call in the Kentucky Derby. He can do whatever is necessary, and he will come with another strong performance. That was his second triple-digit buyer of his career. This horse is no fluke. And, of course, got Steve Asmussen in his corner, all-time winning most trainer in the United States. He knows what it takes to win a Preakness as well. Of course, he's done so with the mighty filly Rachel Alexandra in 2009, as well as with Curlin in 2007. So, look, my money is most likely going to be on Epicenter, although that probably means I'm going to be, what do you like to call it, a chalk-eating weasel, perhaps?
He will likely be the favorite, but we'll be in line at the chalk buffet together when it comes to Epicenter. When is he meant to get to Maryland? Have you heard the current plans?
So far, what I heard is that the majority of horses are going to be arriving early next week. I have been checking, asking if any horses are coming in this week. I've not had any confirmation that, aside from, of course, knowing that Simplification, who ran such a gallant fourth in the Kentucky Derby, is already on side and supposed to hit the track today. So I'll check up to see what he's been doing so far.
We'll make sure. I know you're going to be insane next week, but we'll have to check in with you, get your reports from the grounds. Folks should also be following you on Twitter at Naomi Tucker. That's Tucker with two K's, T-U-A-K-E-R, for those of you listening along to this podcast. One horse who I'm surprised actually is under consideration, and I'm still in my gut, I don't feel like we're going to get to see him run back this quick, is another you mentioned quickly there, Zandon, who also ran pretty well in the Derby, looked like he was going there to win the race, ultimately got turned away by Epicenter. I can't shake the feeling that maybe this is a horse who wants to go a little bit shorter in distance, but you could also just make the argument that he went too fast, too soon, and it took the sting out of his finish. I basically don't see any reason, though, why he's meant to finish ahead of Epicenter and reverse that form. But I don't know, maybe I'm underrating him. This is a talented horse with a lot of upside. If he adds some star power, if he does turn up in Baltimore, what are you hearing? Does it sound like he might actually appear?
Look, I've been in touch with Marie, our stakes coordinator. I've been trying to get as much information as I can, but unfortunately, I'm on the same boat as you are and most people, that we are anxiously awaiting some news from the Chad Brown camp to see if he's actually going to be lining up. I know how bullish he was going into that Kentucky Derby. I've had multiple reports of people saying, we haven't seen him like this about a horse in a while. This is it. This is his chance. My gut feeling is saying if he were to go, we might already start hearing those trickling rumors that he's going to line up. Of course, we know that he's already been pointing early voting to the Preakness as well, a horse that ended up not lining up in the Kentucky Derby. Look, I hope to see Zandon. So perhaps I'm completely wrong, grasping at straws here, what so far has been the vibe. But I know that I've received no news that he's in just yet. When I spoke with Marie 2 days ago, she was saying we're still awaiting more news on some of the Kentucky Derby runners. We already knew about Simplification. We knew Rich Strike. Of course, the aim, if the horse was doing well, is to go there. We got the news of Epicenter. I do believe it was yesterday that he is confirmed. Now we're just anxiously awaiting to hear if Sandon's going to take a chance as well. And look, looking on social media and reading and talking to some of my friends, you hear the sentiment that, why wouldn't people want to line up in the Preakness? You have a long shot Kentucky Derby winner in there. Surely they aren't afraid of Rich Strike. I'm wondering if people are afraid of Epicenter instead. So this is me speculating, but that's kind of my two cents on it.
Let's talk Simplification for a second. This horse definitely outran the odds. it's another one where I find it hard to make the case that Simplification would be able to reverse form with Epicenter in a spot like this, but he certainly deserves his chance. When I look at his past performances, all I can see is Gunavera, a horse that I feel like is going to do this trick again later on in these longer races, well-suited for them, keeps trying, excellent chance to hit the board or even win potentially some of these valuable prizes at some point. But I don't know that he's going to get the right type of setup in the Preakness, but a cool horse. He's sharp. He's in form, certainly deserves his chance. What are your thoughts on this one?
I think you do make a good comparison to Gunavera. Of course, the globetrotting stable star for trainer Antonio Sano, the Dubai World Cup. He comes with that long run. You're hoping he's going to get there. He tries so, so hard in that final quarter. Every single time he gives him his all. Simplification, another honest runner. Indeed, a similar profile in the way that he runs, or the way he ran in the Kentucky Derby, the way he won the Fountain of Youth, coming from behind as well. We've seen him closer to the pace in the Florida Derby. That ended up not resulting in a victory. I still thought he gave a good account of himself, and I like that he got back to a bit more of his front running style, because like I said, I do like a horse to be flexible. He's slowly but steadily progressed. Is it enough to turn the tables on the likes of Epicenter? I'm going to side with you that I say it's going to be unlikely, and guess Simplification jumps up like we saw Rich Try jumping up with about, 15 or so buyer points. Look, Simplification, I'm going to be looking forward to see him. I think he's going to get his share of the prize money. Do I believe he's got that legitimate win chance? No, not entirely. Like I said, I guess I have my love affair with the possible chalk in here, but Simplification, don't discount him as that play for underneath. You can definitely get some value on a horse that might just get slightly overlooked in the wagering markets. If the likes of, for example, Epicenter, Zenden, Rich Strike is there, line up, people are going to go, hey, we know those names, or hey, we know those trainers, in comparison to a horse like Simplification.
Of the horses that did not run in the Derby, I don't think I'm really going out on a limb to call early voting the most interesting one. This is a horse that would have gone to the Derby with a shot, would have been in my, initial Derby top 10 after the final preps were completed. Another thing I like about early voting, well, there's many things I like. I like the early speed. I like the fact that the horse has, I think, more or less been pointed to this race since after the last prep. How serious of a contender do you see early voting being?
Oh, I think he's very, very serious. I am very excited to see early voting in here. Of course, Chad Brown already won with Cloud Computers in 2017 for the exact same connections. We know that they like to win here in Baltimore and Maryland. And early voting, this is going to be a second start after that break. Huge improvement as a three-year-old with that only start to date, being bested by Mo Donegal. We know a lot of people very much liked Mo Donegal in the Derby. Mo Donegal was able to reel him in late. Early voting did all the running over that mile and an eighth. I think that this is the better spot for him. I thought it was a clever thing to do of Chad Brown to say, you know what, we're going to forego the Preakness, not give into that, Kentucky Derby fever like you do see people do. We're going to keep a fresh horse coming in against these runners that have had a tough race, that have tried their hardest 2 weeks ago, and we're going to come in here and we're going to try and win. I feel like early voting would be one of those horses that I see as a win candidate, because the upside is there. You just don't know how good he really is yet. That was a first run off the bench, as a three-year-old. I find him really, really interesting in here. I just think that there's so much more to find with him. And he's the type of horse that I think the mile 316 are also really going to suit.
We'll take a look as we get closer and we have pace maps and all that, but really does look like a candidate to be the best of speed in the Preakness. While we're talking about that Wood Memorial form line, an under the radar runner at this point anyway, Skippy Longstocking was third in there, not far from early voting, had a tougher trip than early voting. This is a horse that ended up steady and going wide, wasn't beaten all that far. Safi Joseph Jr., certainly a trainer who has made his impact on the national scene this year, winning the Gulfstream meet, sending a runner to the Derby, a single digit type runner to the Derby, ended up being a little longer than that, but you know what I mean. I'm curious to know if Skippy Longstocking is on your radar.
I definitely have him on my radar because I actually put him in my selections when we were doing our classic draft. I had him well underneath. So I've been following him for a little bit. Like he raced kind of mid-pack in the two-path around the first turn, then had to go three, about four wide on that home germ in the Wood Memorial. Try to keep on running, maybe a little bit one-paced, a little bit more of a grinder style. Mo Donegal had the sharper clothes on the day, but he did go widest of them all. Looked like he was lugging in a tiny bit, looked like perhaps he was a little bit green still, but just kept on going, kept on grinding. So I think that the added distance wouldn't be too much of a problem for a very young and hungry trainer in Safi Joseph Jr., who, of course, just recently has been crowned the meet leading trainer at the Gulfstream Park Champions Meet. So certainly a feather in his cap. Skippy Longstocking, he has to improve. Like you look at his time form speed figures, you look at his buyers, he has to do a little bit better, right? He has to take that next step. But again, a fresh horse coming into here for a young and hungry trainer, he's not as exposed as I feel perhaps some of the others are.
A horse that also last ran in a key Kentucky Derby prep is Un Ojo. Ended up being ruled out of the Derby to point for this instead. I'm on record, despite the success of the filly, who some will call me a host fail that I haven't gotten to yet. We'll get to her next. But despite her success in the Oaks, I've been a little bit skeptical of the form of the Arkansas Derby, but Un Ojo looks like he'll take his place in the Preakness starting gate. And if nothing else, there'll be plenty of features about him because the public seems to love the one-eyed equines. What of Un Ojo?
It's a wonderful story, isn't it? Like the underdog winning the Kentucky Derby, the horse with one eye. I'm going to be very excited to see him train and get to know the connections a little bit more close. You haven't seen the horse in person, but of course, did hear about what happened in the Arkansas Derby where he finished eighth. That was on April 2nd. He hit the rail twice. Apparently, he had staples put in his shoulder. The staples were removed. I think it was a week and a half before the Kentucky Derby. And it was, I guess, a little bit of a race against the clock to see, is he going to be okay? Is he lining up? Wasn't the case. They chose to point towards the middle duel of the Triple Crown instead. Have to commend the connections for that. Look, in terms of his performances so far, he did win the Grade 2 Rebel earlier this year. I'm not entirely sure he bested the strongest of three-year-olds in there. Sorry, a three-year-old who might just be lining up here as well. But he was, one of the lower horses that was on the AE list, ended up coming in, not running for the mic for, of course, incredible trainer in the iconic Dwayne Lucas. But in all, to me, I'm just going to be looking to get to know the connections, looking for the story. It'd be a wonderful long shot winner. Not entirely sure he's progressed enough to indicate to me that he's got what it takes to win. But look, we've been all proven wrong with Rich Strike, so it can definitely happen again.
Let's get back to the horse that I should have mentioned already, our Oaks winner. She was pretty much imperious in victory in that very salty Kentucky Oaks. She ran a big number. Your first Preakness, I think it was, back in 2020, you saw
Hopefully
take on the boys and do so successfully with Swiss Skydiver. Can we catch that lightning in a bottle once again with Secret Oath?
Six fillies have won the Preakness thus far. Of course, most recently, Swiss Skydiver in 2020, Rachel Alexander in 2009. And before that, huge gap, right? The last one before Rachel Alexander was in 1924 with Nellie Morse. And then you go back down in 1915, 1906, 1903. So only recently two fillies have done so. Clearly, it's not an easy try. Now, if anyone is capable of doing it, I feel like it's Dwayne Lucas, of course, Hall of Famer, coach, developer of all these incredible trainers. He's won six Preaknesses. Unfortunately for him, that is not a record. We do have two trainers sitting on seven Preakness wins, but coach did tied the record for most Oaks wins with Secret Oath, fifth, with, I do believe it's trainer Woody Stevens. So, look, if anyone can do it, it's Dwayne Lucas. Secret Oath also nominated for the Grade 2 Black Eyed Susan, of course, going against her own sex, but she's strongly considered for this race. Look, I thought it was a tremendous performance, just a really, really strong ride from Louis Size, like you've come to expect from her, from him. Love how he just kind of bit his time with her and make a move a little bit later into the race and just kept on gliding around the outside. Just, the best thing to do for a thoroughbred is to ensure that they have an even trip, right? To have, make sure that they have even splits, no stopping, no switching, no kind of drama involved. Well, Secret Oath was able to do that because Louis Size put her in that position. So like on speed figures, her last race was a 94 buyer. We've got a couple male runners in here that have run similar figures to that. So I think she's very well placed in here. She's going to have to run a lifetime best to topple the likes of Epicenter or maybe even Zandam when he lines up, or Rich Strike, if indeed, like you said, Lightning Strike twice. We don't know, but I do know that Swiss Skydiver wasn't given that much credit going against the boys. And well, she dueled with the Kentucky Derby winner in Authentic, and she did so victoriously. So definitely never say never.
Can't be ruled out. She does have to probably get faster, run another career best coming back in 2 weeks, but she's very sharp. Like you say, she's in the right hands to pull this trick. We'll see what happens. I'm very curious what happens with the price with her. The narrative I remember with Swiss Skydiver was this was a horse I think everybody thought was going to be 7-2, who ended up being 10-1. If Secret Oath ends up somehow, I feel like it's similar here. I'm expecting a 4-1 second choice. If we end up getting double digit odds, I'm not going to fall asleep at the wheel twice, as we talk about so often on these shows. At the end of the day, we're not really just betting horses. We're betting prices as well. We just got a couple minutes left because I know you've got to get to work, so we can speed round the rest of these contenders. What can you tell us about Creative Minister? Another one on the list here for Ken McPeak, apparently going to be ridden by Brian Hernandez Jr., winner of an allowance race at Churchill the other day.
Yeah, so a quick turnaround for him. Of course, he ran just last week, and similar turnaround, of course, for the horses that are coming in after the Kentucky Derby. But clearly they were so impressed with his performance on the day that they thought, you know what, he deserves his chance here in the Preakness. Kenny McPeak famously, because I remember this, told me that when they arrived with Swiss Skydive, they were there to slay elephants. They are there to win. So I'm going to say, if he brings a horse in like Creative Minister, who jumped up so significantly in his performance at Churchill Downs last time out, who clearly showed that he deserves his spot here in the Preakness, I'm not going to be sleeping on him. Like you said, he was a winner on the undercard not too long ago. So I'm definitely curious as to see how he will fare. The fact that he didn't line up, obviously, in the Kentucky Derby because he had no points. He'd only just broken his maiden, but a fast improving individual that I wouldn't completely discount.
Yeah, on figures, this horse isn't far behind, if behind at all. And the 2 weeks thing, we're not used to it in modern racing, but I think even the recent history of trainers doing it, it tends to go pretty well because the horses are so sharp and in form. If he can back that effort up and get a trip, he's another one of the I was trying not to use this term, but I can't help it. Another one of the new shooters who makes a little bit of sense in here. McPeak also has Rattle and Roll apparently pointed this way, coming from a sixth place finish in the Bluegrass. I'm personally more interested in the comparatively unexposed Creative Minister, but what do you know about Rattle and Roll?
Rattle and Roll. Yeah, I quickly mentioned Creative Minister, the quick turnaround. I did get the chance to speak with trainer Billy Boniface, who won the Preakness in, I think it was 1983, with the Peter Testimony. He turned him back around a week before the Preakness after a fiasco in the Bluegrass. He said, I wanted to get his hopes up. I wanted to get his confidence up. Minor stakes at Delaware. And look where it got him. He said, look, we used to run these horses all the time. And he said, I don't believe the horses have gotten softer. I think the trainers are too worried about their record. That's him saying that. So
a Maryland legend, too. A guy who, of all races, I respect his opinion about anything horse and horseman related, but particularly the Preakness.
I mean, what a story it was with him winning with the Peter Testimony in 1983. Of course, the only horse that have ever won the Federico Tessio and Preakness Stakes double. But just to highlight that it is very doable, a two-week turnaround. We know it's tough. That's why it's called the Triple Crown. But they used to run their horses all the time back in the day. So I don't think it should be too much of an issue, especially with a lightly raced individual like Creative Minister. Now, Rattle and Roll, look, I expected big things from him coming into his three-year-old year. Of course, the Breeders' Futurity winner on time from US. He had run huge figures as a two-year-old and only had to improve slightly to start besting these three-year-olds. hasn't really made it happen since starting out here in March in the Fountain of Youth and then the Louisiana Derby, then sixth in the Brugas. I just not sure if he was a fast developer as a two-year-old and hence was able to best the youngsters at Keeneland. I'm not sure what to make of him. Like you said, I guess I'm more interested in Creative Minister, who's fastly improved his rattle and roll instead of him really moving on as a three-year-old. Hasn't taken those forward steps just yet.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to take a lot. It's interesting. The form of that race, that Breeders' Futurity, which had looked questionable for a while, is looking better lately, but I just haven't seen enough development for him to have an impact in a race like this. The only other horse I have on my list that is pointing this direction is another one you and I have spoken about before. This one comes out of the Tessio, the local prep, often unproductive for the Preakness, but still the local prep for this one. Shake 'Em Loose was third in there under Charlie Marquez. I will say this, watching that race back, I think he's probably better than the Tessio run. That was a difficult trip. Didn't break well. Ended up down on the rail on a day where that wasn't maybe the place to be. And never spit it. You know, was really trying to the line. So this is a cool horse, but probably in over the head.
Yeah, he came in there off the back of a win in the private terms where he was able to topple Joe, who, of course, was coming back into Federico Tessio as well, and did it emphatically, you know, did it by about, what was it, a length and a half or more, I think length and three quarters. Clearly a horse that they thought very highly of, local trainer and owner, that is in Rudy Sanchez Solomon, because he had claimed him not too long ago. Very, very sharp claiming trainer. Came back in that Federico Tessio, like you said, wasn't really able to get as close to the lead or on the lead we've seen him do in the past. Did come from off the pace as well with that win in the private terms. But look, when it came to the Federico Tessio, to be quite honest, I spoke with Michael Trombetta. He said Joe wasn't tuned up in the private terms. We had him ready for the Federico Tessio. He might have come up a little bit short. So quality-wise, it seemed like Joe was just a better horse on the day. Now, he did have Mr. Jefferson, stablemate of Joe, running him down belatedly. Shake 'Em Loose couldn't land a blow. So either just has to kind of bounce back. Not disgraced in my books at all, but did get bested by the Trombetta trained pair by about five lengths or so. So does have to come back with that better effort. It'd be a wonderful story because, of course, young Charlie Marquez was nominated as for Champion Apprentice Award. The Eclipse Awards was the leading rider last year at Pimlico. It's just a tremendous talent who has really, really made himself known on the Mid-Atlantic circuit. That does, historically speaking, tend to produce very, very good riders. He did have a Hall of Famer, Chris McCarron, visit us not too long ago at Laurel Park as well. So it'd be a wonderful story for the Mid-Atlantic connections. Do I think that Shake 'Em Loose right now is that good to best a horse like Epicenter and Kentucky Derby winner? Probably not, but it'd be great if they lined up.
All right, you got to get to work, but I do have a couple of very quick questions for you before we get out of here. In the main, I want people to know where they should be watching, how they can get more of you as we do the ramp up to this historic Preakness.
Yeah, do you have the simulcast feed every live race day coming up? So that's at Pimlico, the website, as well as laurelpark.com. You can click on the live racing feed. You see me there, joined by Clay Fransroth throughout the week. Normally you have Tim Tulloch as well, but he also have another job. He's a safety compliance officer. So he's making sure everything is going well on the backside. Of course, it's so busy with all these stakes horses coming in throughout the week. It's going to be a busy one. Everyone's going to be on the backside, especially that Preakness barn is going to be the place to be. So very, very excited. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at NaomiTucker.com, Tucker with two Ks, like we've highlighted before. So I'm going to try and give everyone as much news and video clips as possible when those Preakness runners start trickling in. But like we said, we've already got one on the ground in Simplification. And I think I replied to someone's tweet saying the early bird catches the worm. He's been there. So of course, yeah, super, super excited.
Good stuff. You got to be following Naomi on Twitter for all the latest updates from Maryland Jockey Club, etc. You'll join me next week. We'll do it. We'll do some type of final answer show. We'll cover Black Eyed Susan Day. You game for that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Love Black Eyed Susan Day. That the whole weekend, Black Eyed Susan Day, Preakness Day. Oh, the quality of racing is just
the chef's kiss. Naomi giving the chef's kiss for those listening on audio. So yeah, we won't hold your feet to the fire for any early picks. We'll do all that there. How many days are you guys racing next week? That can be your last question.
So we'll be racing the Thursday to Friday and the Saturday. That's kind of what's normally done as well. So really, really looking forward to getting back in the saddle at Pimlico, because we're actually starting there today. So can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a little bit more of a drive for me than obviously Laurel Park. I'm based in Washington, D.C., so a touch bit further. But look, that week is going to be incredible. We've got a full race day week coming up as of today. So today, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday. And then on Thursday, we'll resume live racing action. And of course, we cap it off with Black Eyed Susan Day on Friday. And then Preakness Stakes, as well as the 9 tremendous undercard races complementing that meal duel, the Triple Crown on Saturday. So yeah, tune in and come and join us in the infield, because parties galore. I know that there's a culinary fest as well on Friday. So kind of intrigued by that one. Seems like there's the whole package deal.
That's cool. That's good to know. That's good
to
know.
A lot of different activities. So yeah, Pete, you have to come and taste some of the samples.
I love that. You will not catch me doing the running of the porta potties, but you may see me in the infield. I'm still upset that they took away Kegasus, by the way. I mean, he was before your time, but he was quite the Preakness mascot. But, you know, the times change, people change, et cetera, et cetera. Really looking forward to seeing you, my friend. I get in on Wednesday. There's the America's Best Racing Party that night. I think there's still tickets available for that. I'll tweet that out if you follow me, at Looms Boldly. But I've kept you longer than I said I would, Naomi. I'm going to let you get to work. Really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome, Pete. It's going to be a fun week.